I'd like to acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land upon which this recording takes place, the Gubbi Gubbi people of Southeast Queensland. I honour their continuing connection to land, sea and sky, as well as their elders, past, present and emerging. Hey there, welcome back to the Men, Sex and Pleasure podcast. I'm your host, Cam Fraser. This is episode number 204. We're talking all things masculinity, sexuality, male bodies and men's experiences of pleasure. And on this particular episode, I have the pleasure of chatting with Dr. Judson Brandeis. Dr. Brandeis has been voted top urologist in the San Francisco Bay Area by San Francisco Magazine from 2014 to 2020. And in February 2019, he opened his office in San Ramon, where he focuses his practice entirely on men's sexual health and rejuvenation. Dr. Brandeis is the National Director of Clinical Excellence for Gainswave and created and runs the SWEET study, the largest study of shockwave therapy for erectile dysfunction ever performed. Dr. Brandeis is also a national sexual medicine educator who has run weekend educational seminars all around the United States. And you can find his website for his clinical practice, which is known as Brandeis MD, at www.brandeismd.com. Just BrandeisMD.com or on Instagram at Judson Brandeis MD. That's JudsonBrandeisMD. And on this particular episode, Judson and I talk about erectile dysfunction and the treatment options that are available for it. Specifically, we go into low intensity shockwave therapy as a treatment, and the types of shockwave therapy that are available. The one that Dr. Brandeis specifically uses in his practice, how it works, why it might be an option that you consider checking out. And then we speak about his protocol for enhancing or lengthening the penis, which he calls his P-Long protocol, which involves a penis extender, as well as pumping, as well as supplementation. And it's a multimodal approach, which is really great. So if you're interested in bettering your erections through a particular modality, such as low intensity shockwave therapy, or enhancing your penis, enlarging it, then this is going to be the episode for you. Dr. Brandeis is super well respected, very reputable, and offers a lot of really great information and breaks down some of the questions that you might have about these particular treatments. So yeah, check it out. Super enjoyable to get to know Judson a little bit more and to have this type of conversation. It's not really one that I've had a lot before, but it was fantastic to get this information and hopefully help other guys learn a bit more about what is available for them. So I hope you enjoy listening. Well, you and I can jump in. And the way I like to start, mate, is with three questions. I like to ask you, who are you? What do you do? And what are you really passionate about?
Oh, who am I? Well, you know, in this context, I am a board certified urologist. I've been in practice for almost 25 years. I trained at UCLA in both surgery and urology. I'm a pioneer in surgical medicine. I helped pioneer the Da Vinci surgical robot. I helped pioneer kidney stone centers. I helped pioneer MRI guided prostate biopsies. And about 5-6 years ago, I helped pioneer low intensity shockwave therapy for erectile dysfunction. And then recently I launched P-Long, which is the first and only natural, safe and effective technique for increasing the length, girth and function of a healthy guy's penis.
Beautiful, man. And I presume you're passionate about this work. Otherwise you probably wouldn't be doing it for so long, but is there anything else that you're really passionate about?
Yeah, I'm super passionate about men's health in general. And I wrote a book called The 21st Century Man, which is the most comprehensive and medically accurate men's health book ever written. It's over 900 pages, 101 chapters, 60 co-contributors. And it covers really every aspect of men's health, from physical, emotional, sexual, relationship health, specialty. Yeah.
Amazing. When was that book released?
About a year and a half ago, it was my COVID project.
Nice one. Yeah, we all had some COVID project. The podcast that you're on right now was my COVID project, and it's
Oh,
still
nice.
going strong, which is great. Do you plan on revising and updating the book as the years roll out?
Oh, gosh, not if I want to stay married.
That's very fair. That's very fair. I know it's a massive undertaking. Well, I'm excited to be chatting with you, mate, all things men's health, specifically penile health. And I'd love to talk to you about low intensity shockwave therapy and PLONG, the non-invasive way of increasing length, girth, and function. But I want to start with, how did you get into all of this? What was it about men's health, penises, that were of interest to you and made you go down this current career path?
Yeah, I mean, so I started reading about low intensity shockwave therapy and the ability to increase the vascularity of the penis. And that was really kind of intriguing to me that, you know, it's great that we developed Viagra or Sildenafil, Cialis, so that guys can temporarily increase the function of their penis, but that only boosts the signal to be able to boost the vascularity of the blood vessels to a more permanent state of improved function. That was really fascinating to me. So that's why I moved from general urology, where I had a very successful practice, to what I call regenerative urology, the ability to help guys who are having difficulty getting erections because of blood flow issues to be able to succeed.
Sure. So it's vasculogenic ED is the type of men that you're working with.
Exactly. It doesn't work for neurogenic erectile dysfunction, doesn't work for hormonal, doesn't work for traumatic, doesn't work for psychogenic. But 90% of erectile dysfunction, give or take, is vasculogenic. So
yeah, and I appreciate you making that distinction as well, because I often hear people who talk about this one size fits all cure for erectile dysfunction. And then I go, well, you know, there isn't only one type of erectile dysfunction. So how can that be the case? And so I'm appreciate that you're making that distinction. What can cause vasculogenic erectile dysfunction? What are some of the reasons why a guy might develop it?
Yeah. So, I mean, anything that compromises the lumen or the caliber of blood vessels. So, for example, some of it's genetic. Like, for example, South Asian men or Indian men have blood vessels that are much smaller than Caucasian men. That's just the way they're built. So they have a much higher incidence of erectile dysfunction at earlier ages. They also have a much higher incidence of cardiovascular disease at early ages. But, you know, things like what we call the standard American diet, the SAD diet, you know, high cholesterol, high fat, sedentary lifestyle, smoking, drinking too much, you know, diabetes, obesity, all these things contribute to damage to blood vessels, which contribute to the narrowing of blood vessels. And since the penis is one of the furthest organs from the human heart, and the blood vessels going to the penis are only to 1 or 2 millimeters, it's very easy to see how their function can be compromised. And the thing is, the penis moves entirely based on blood flow. It's the only organ in the body that moves really based entirely on blood flow. So it's really an on-off switch. And if you don't achieve a blood pressure high enough in the penis in order to block the backflow of blood back into the system, then you're going to have a full penis, but you're not going to have a rigid erection.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's something I want to circle back to maybe later on in our conversation, is the what's sometimes called a hard flaccid, and you know, the variations in having a full penis but not an erect penis, and a flaccid penis but also maybe parts of the penis being rigid or tumescent. And so there's some stuff there I'd love to go into the weeds with you with. But before we get there, I guess what I want to then ask about is, where did low intensity shockwave therapy for helping with vasculogenic erectile dysfunction, where did that come from? You said you were pioneering that, so what led to that?
Well, you know, originally it came out of Israel. There was a paper from a group in Israel in 2010 that showed that using shockwaves on the soft tissue of the penis can increase the vascularity and increase the blood flow to the penis. And I don't know why they were crazy enough to try that, but
sure, some very brave early patients there, I imagine.
Yeah, some you know, either that or maybe one too many beers were involved.
Right, right.
But they actually did a legitimate study that was published in a legitimate journal, and that sort of started the low intensity shockwave therapy for erectile dysfunction revolution. And then really a lot of the clinical research was done at UC San Francisco by a guy named Tom Liu. And what he did is he took a whole bunch of rats, because you couldn't really do this with old guys, you know, and did shockwave therapy on rat penises. And what they found was that there was an upregulation of vascular growth factors called VEGF. There was an upregulation of nitric oxide, which is the signal that opens up blood vessels. There was an upregulation of stem cells and an upregulation of new blood vessels. And so that's the way in which low intensity shockwave therapy, at least currently, how we believe it works is it upregulates growth factors, stem cells, and the growth of new blood vessels. There's an idea that it knocks plaque off blood vessels, but that's never been proven, and I don't necessarily know how that would work.
Sure. Yeah. And it can sound relatively intense. I've spoken to some guys who don't know anything about modalities for erectile function and penile health. And when I say low intensity shockwave therapy is a thing, they go, what the F is that? And so I'm wondering if you're able to describe what a low intensity shockwave therapy treatment would look like. What does it actually involve, and how invasive is it?
Yeah, it's totally not invasive. It's mildly uncomfortable. It feels maybe like someone's, you know, smacking, you know, gently smacking the penis a little bit. So it's like a rubber band would be hitting the penis. And what it does is it sends a shock wave, or a wave of energy through the penis. And so the penis, or the blood vessels in the penis, interpret that as a state of injury. And when your body gets injured, then it generates an injury response. But let me say that there's no injury that's actually caused by the shock waves. It's just triggering an injury response. And part of that injury response is a healing response. And part of that healing response is the growth of new blood vessels. So you're basically tricking the body into growing new blood vessels. And those new blood vessels bring blood into the penis at higher pressures. And so you're able to block the backflow of venous blood back to the body.
Mm. And shockwave therapy, from what I understand, is being used on other muscle groups in the body. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, you know, so it's used in for musculoskeletal purposes, although it tends not to be used as much for what we call neovascularization, or the growth of new blood vessels, but more sort of the breaking up of scar tissue. And so there's a disease condition in urology called Peyronie's disease, which is a curvature of the penis where there is scar tissue, and you can use, in properly selected patients, shockwave therapy to break up those Peyronie's plaques. But here we're really focused on generating new blood vessels. And there is some evidence from the wound healing literature that shockwave therapy will help wound healing. And also they're in Japan, they're doing studies on using it to help revascularize heart tissue for patients who have had heart failure. You know, the thing is, it's easier to access the penis than it is to access the heart, because you have to go through the rib cage. But, you know, that there are other organ systems that, you know, are being investigated for shockwave therapy.
Yeah. And it's, from what I understand, and again, this is very minimal, is that there are different types of shockwave therapy, right? So this is low intensity that's being used on the penis, and there's focused and radial types of shockwaves, and there's different ways of using it. Is that correct?
Yeah. So, you know, basically there's radial and there's focused. So radial, you can think of dropping a pebble into a flat pond, and you have waves of energy that ripple out from a central energy source, right? And so that's radial shockwave therapy. Focused shockwave therapy would be if you had the wave and it was focused on a single point. And so that both radial and focused have been used for the treatment of erectile dysfunction. Most of the literature is based on the focused shockwave. And there have been two studies that have actually compared both radial and focused that shows that they're fairly equivalent. I think in my own experience, focused may be a little bit better, but they both seem to work.
Sure. Is that what you use in your own clinical practice?
I have both a focused and a radial shockwave device.
Yeah. Okay. Do you get clients prefer one or the other?
We're transitioning most of our patients to the focused device. But like I said, both of them have seemed to work in the past.
And are these devices available for home use? Are there ones that people purchase online, or do they have to go specifically to a clinic?
You potentially could purchase a device online. A real device costs about $40,000 or $50,000, though. There are some devices that they sell online, like the Phoenix, but there's never been any data, despite marketing claims by the company, that the Phoenix or any of those other devices actually work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so what's the, when we say working, what should a potential client expect to see in terms of results if they're going in for low intensity shockwave therapy?
Yeah. So, you know, typically if I see a guy in his early 50s that's starting to become more dependent on Viagra, then after 6 or 8 shockwave therapy treatments, they'll no longer need Viagra. If there's someone in their 60s that Viagra's not working so well anymore, then I'll get them to the point where Viagra seems to work really well. And if there's someone in their 70s that things just aren't working, I can get them to the point where, you know, with PDE5 inhibitors like Viagra and Cialis, things seem to work reasonably well. I can't turn the clock back to someone who, being 18 or 20 years old, but usually it rolls the clock back about 5 or 10 years.
Sure, sure. So you started there at the age of 50. So is that the minimum age of clients that you'll see?
Yeah, I see folks in their 40s sometimes. You know, people with diabetes or other comorbidities, smokers, people that are really sedentary. You know, that's the genesis of my book, The 21st Century Man, is that there's a lot of stuff that can affect erectile function, both physiologic and psychological. So, you know, in terms of physiology, I had a guy a couple of weeks ago who had sleep apnea and hadn't had a good night's sleep in 5 or 10 years. And he developed erectile dysfunction because at night you should be getting 30 to 60 minutes of erections every night. And he wasn't getting any erections at night. So his penis wasn't working all that well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like to say to my clients that erections beget erections. And so if you're not getting those nighttime erections, those nocturnal erections, then you're not giving yourself the opportunity to have that penis functioning as optimally as it could.
Exactly.
So that's really interesting as well. Thanks for sharing that. And you said, what, 6 to 8 sessions? Is that correct?
Yeah, for someone in their 50s. You know, for someone in their 70s, maybe a dozen sessions. But there are other things that we do. So, you know, I believe in multimodal approaches. And so I work on the signal, I work on the flexibility of the tissue, and I work on the blood vessels and then, you know, other things. So, you know, in terms of signal, the signal to open up blood vessels in our body comes from a molecule called nitric oxide, which is released by nerves and crosses the synapse and activates, I'm trying to explain a very complicated scientific process. So it creates something called cyclic GMP. And cyclic GMP creates a cascade that opens up blood vessels. So the more cyclic GMP that you have, the more blood vessels are open. And that's the case from head to toe in men, women, cats, dogs, kangaroos, rhinoceroses. You know, all mammals use nitric oxide to open up blood vessels. And then when I was at UCLA, one of my friends was doing research on erections and nitric oxide and discovered that there's a specific enzyme in the penis called PDE5. And Viagra just so happens to block PDE5. And PDE5 in the penis will break down cyclic GMP. So it basically keeps the cyclic GMP around and in the system.
And that's hence why Viagra is known as a PDE5 inhibitor.
Exactly. So I put all of my patients on a nitric oxide booster, and I actually created a nitric oxide booster called Affirm, which is available at Affirm Science. And it uses both pathways. So you have two pathways in your body to create nitric oxide. One is the citrulline arginine pathway, and the other is the nitrite nitric oxide pathway. So citrulline is in watermelon, and nitrates are in beets and green leafy vegetables. And so if you're supposed to get about 50% from both, and so Affirm has both beets and has watermelon. And, you know, these are used for multiple purposes because nitric oxide boosters have a systemic effect. So I use them to naturally decrease blood pressure. A lot of elite endurance athletes and bodybuilders use them to improve circulation when they're working out or when they're racing. They help with cognition. They help, you know, people think better because you get better blood flow to the brain. And of course, they help with genital circulation. And so if you boost nitric oxide and then you boost cyclic GMP and then you take a PDE5 inhibitor like Viagra or Cialis, then you keep that cyclic GMP around until you're maximizing the signal. So you maximize the signal, and then you use low intensity shockwave therapy or Gainswave, or there's, you know, a whole bunch of different names for it, to stimulate stem cells and stimulate growth factors to start growing new blood vessels. And then you can use something like platelet-rich plasma or PRP to continue to stimulate those stem cells. So PRP is kind of like fertilizer that you would put on a little growing tree.
Mm-hmm. Is there, you're opening up a bunch of can of worms in different directions that I could go in here, but PRP, is that through injection? So it's like taking some blood, putting it through a cylindrical spinning thing to get the plasma-rich blood and then injecting it back in?
Exactly. So, you know, platelets in the body have two functions. One function everyone knows, causing a clot. But the second function really is equally or more important, which is regenerating tissue, right? So if you're out, you know, surfing one day and you cut yourself on the coral reef, you start bleeding, then all of a sudden the platelets get called to that area. They form a clot. That clot then turns into a scab. That scab falls off. And when that scab falls off, that the tissue underneath grows back. Right. So how does it grow back? Why does it grow back? It grows back because the platelets also release growth factors, and those growth factors stimulate the regrowth of that tissue to heal that tissue. And so what we do is we draw blood, we spin the blood down in a centrifuge, the red blood cells go to the bottom, the plasma goes to the top, and the middle layer are platelets and white blood cells. And so we harvest those platelets and white blood cells, and then using ultrasound guidance, we inject them back into the penis. But at much higher concentrations, and those platelets are activated, meaning they're actively giving off growth factors. And when they give off growth factors, they tend to stimulate stem cells and other cells that are rapidly proliferating.
Mm-hmm. And I really appreciate the multidimensional approach to health. It speaks to the holistic nature of our sexuality and our sexual function. I think that's really important to highlight and emphasize there. I don't take a lot of supplements, but I'm diligent and vigilant when it comes to eating watermelon, for example, and eating dark leafy green vegetables. And that's because I know about the importance that it has on nitric oxide levels, for example. I used to take a nitric oxide supplement, and I used to share that with some of the guys that I did a particular practice with. But I've since gone onto a specific diet around that, which is works for me. And I'm thankful that you're mentioning that as well. And what I wanted to ask you is, do you incorporate any penis pumps or pumping into the multimodal approach that you use for penile health and erection reliability?
Yeah, that's a great question. So usually for men who aren't getting nighttime erections, so men who are in their 60s or 70s or men who are diabetics, then I will definitely incorporate penis pumps. You know, but guys usually don't like to use them. And so if a guy's getting nighttime erections, and I'll put a lot of my patients on Cialis or Tadalafil before they go to sleep. So if I can get them to get nighttime erections with medication, then I typically don't prescribe the penis pumps. But if they're not able to get nighttime erections, then definitely a penis pump is indicated.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's a whole nother rabbit hole we can go down, is penis pumps and the different types and ways to use them. And I have a couple of questions, I suppose, that I guess the major question that is related to everything we've spoken about is, what are the risk factors and are there any adverse effects of doing any of these particular treatments?
Really, that's the beautiful thing about all of this, is that there's really no downside. I mean, I used to do big operations on prostates and kidneys and bladders, and you know, there were a lot of potential side effects and negative effects, and even, you know, prescribing medication as a urologist. But, you know, nitric oxide boosters, there's no negative effects. PDE5 inhibitors, there's very minor effects. You know, you can get a little bit of reflux, you can get a headache, you can get some nasal congestion. But other than that, they're really super safe. In fact, Tadalafil or Cialis, you know, it improves erectile function. It's FDA approved for improving urinary function. There's data that shows that it decreases dementia, and there's data that shows that it's heart healthy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So find me another medication that is heart healthy, helps reduce dementia, helps you pee better, and helps you get better erections.
Yeah. And I think if I remember my history correctly, that Tadalafil, Viagra, was originally created as a heart medication. Is that correct?
Yeah, so Pfizer was testing it to improve heart function, and the patients that were getting the prescriptions in the recovery room were all lying on their bellies.
Yes.
And some astute nurse started asking them, like, "Well, why you're lying on your bellies?" And sure enough, they said, "Well, because we got raging hormones."
When trying to hide it. Yeah.
And
I've also read and heard NFL players, for example, talk about using Viagra to help enhance their performance on the field because it helps with blood flow and the extra blood flow helps
Well, I don't
oxygenate their
know.
bodies and they
They
feel
may be
much.
doing something in the
Yes. Yeah,
huddle that I'm not seeing.
I've seen a few interviews, so I have to send them to you, Justin, because there's some fascinating anecdotes there.
Yeah, I think you'd be much better off. The data on dementia and the data on heart disease really is more data on the effect of nitric oxide. And if you did a head-to-head study between a PDE5 inhibitor and a nitric oxide booster in terms of effectiveness versus heart disease and effectiveness versus dementia, the nitric oxide booster would be much, much more effective.
Yeah, fascinating. What about the low intensity shockwave therapy? I presume those 6 to 8 sessions are spread out over the course of several weeks. There's a bit of a protocol there.
Yeah, typically we do it once a week for 6 weeks.
Sure. So you wouldn't be recommending just go and do 6 to 8 sessions in 6 to 8 days?
No. I mean, your body needs, it'd be like, well, I want to learn how to bench press more weight. Okay, I'm going to go to the gym and for 7 straight days, I'm going to bench press. No, that's not the way it works. You tear muscle down and then you give your body a chance to rebuild the muscle. So with shockwave therapy, you're stimulating a growth cycle, but then you have to allow that growth cycle to occur. You can't just keep stimulating without growth.
Yes, similar to pumping, I presume as well, right? Like you wouldn't just pump for hours on end every day for the next fortnight because you'll potentially do some damage if you're not following the correct protocols. Is that fair to say?
Exactly. Yeah,
Yeah.
absolutely.
Yeah. With the, I guess with the pumping that you recommend to particular clients in their 50s, 60s, 70s who don't get those nighttime erections as reliably as they should, do you have a protocol that you share with them? Is there a specific, this is what you got to start with before you start trying to pump for an extended period of time? Like, what's the strategy there?
Yeah, so I have a YouTube channel called Brandeis MD, Brandeis MD. And that is actually my most popular video, believe it or not. I have over 100,000 views on just that one video alone, which is kind of astonishing to me. But typically what I'll do is I'll just have guys pump their penis up for a minute or two and then release it, then a minute or two and then release it, and just cycle that for about 10 or 15 minutes, just once a day.
Yeah. And is that something that is something they're going to do for the rest of their life? Or is it something that they can expect to stop at a certain point? Like what's the longevity there?
Yeah, everyone wants to stop doing stuff, but Mother Nature doesn't stop doing stuff, right? So when you're younger, you're getting erections every night. It's not like Mother Nature's taking a day off. So if guys want to continue having penetrative intercourse, then they're going to have to pump. They're going to have to do shockwave therapy. They're going to have to do PRP. They're going to have to take PDE5 inhibitors. They're going to have to take nitric oxide boosters. We weren't built to live as long as we live. That's the sad, brutal truth is that, we're supposed to get eaten by a saber-toothed tiger when we're 35 or 40 years old. And so we're not physiologically, we're not really prepared to live as long as we live. And so when functions start to go in the wrong direction, we have to compensate for them. I do a lot of testosterone replacement and guys in their 60s and 70s are like, well, am I going to have to take this for the rest of my life? Well, if you look at the curve of how you make testosterone, it goes down like that. So it doesn't, at 75, all of a sudden start going back up. Well, unless you're taking medication.
Something that I've heard recently, which I'd love to hear your thoughts about, is the introduction of interval pumping and the differences between the ways that guys are using pumps to help with their, because I think I should probably preface this and say there's different reasons why men might use a penis pump, right? So for example, in the work that I do, which is not very clinical, I'll suggest a guy use a penis pump if he is having some unreliable erections when he's being sexual with his partner, or maybe it's much more play and pleasure oriented. If he wants to explore just having a fuller penis with his partner, maybe with the use of a cock ring as well, and they want to explore what it's like to play with a penis that's slightly fuller and it's very temporary, and I don't have a big protocol around doing it for a long period of time for a specific clinical reason. But then I know there's other guys that are pumping because they're, as you have been describing, wanting to get on top of their erectile function and increase reliability and make sure that they're, you know, doing it as part of a multimodal treatment. And I know some guys are pumping because they want to increase length, girth, size in general. So there's different reasons why people might pump, which I think is important to acknowledge. But I guess where I'm building to is, so there are different ways of using a pump. And one of the things that I've heard recently is the way guys are doing interval pumping. And so I wanted to ask you about that and what your thoughts are on it, and whether you think it's a worthwhile thing to explore.
Yeah, you know, I honestly, I've never heard of interval pumping, so I'm not quite sure what that is.
Okay, sure.
And yeah, there's very little literature on what is the right way of doing things. I think that that pumping and holding is probably not the best thing. You know, when I get up in the morning and stretch, I go down and touch my knees, then I stand up straight, then I touch my shins, then I stand up straight, I touch my ankles, and I stand up straight, and finally I can get to the point where I touch the floor. So, you know, that's the way that collagen in the body is constructed, is it's kind of like a box of spaghetti, and those fibers slide alongside each other. And so just pulling straight for a long period of time probably isn't as good as is doing sort of what I consider 1 or 2 minute intervals. So if that's what interval training is, then I pioneered interval training.
Amazing. I love that. Sure.
I just didn't call it that.
Because something I always am mindful of to educate about is the dangers of over pumping, because I know some guys, especially because pumps, for example, are devices that you can just buy online. They're relatively inexpensive if you're going for a cheaper one. And some guys might do what they might buy a pump without a gauge, for example, and they might just go to town. And it's very easy to over pump because of the accessibility and availability of them, as opposed to the $40,000-$50,000 low intensity shockwave machine. No one's going to just go out and buy that and have it in their home and start doing that for 4 hours a day, right? So I wanted to ask you about the potential dangers or the potential adverse impacts of over pumping.
Yeah. Well, you know, fortunately, I've never seen anyone's penis get pulled off their body with a pump.
That's good. Good to know.
Yeah. So that's a good place to start. You know, people that are over enthusiastic tend to create what are called petechiae, or little ruptured capillaries. And so they'll end up with a purple penis. And so they learn eventually what pressures to pump up to. You know, for penile stretching, I just tell guys to get a full penis. And then for the P-Long protocol, which is my penile enhancement protocol, I tell guys to pump it up to full and then go about 10% above that. And with the Dr. Joel Kaplan penis pumps that we use, there's a little gauge, and we tell them get into the yellow zone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've reached out to Kaplan and his team to try and get him on the podcast. So hopefully they get back to me and say that he's keen, because I'd love to have a chat with him about the products. Well, that's, I guess it's a nice transition then into your P-Long protocol. So where did this come from, penile enhancement? Where's that idea stem from?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's been an idea since the beginning of time. You can see like Egyptian hieroglyphics with guys with, like, you know, trying penile enhancement. So, you know, when they do studies, 50% of men want a longer penis, and then 50% of men are lying. Mm-hmm.
I have read a study that was like 98% of guys are unhappy with the size of their penis, and like 98% of those guys are wanting a bigger penis. That was the reference that I typically cite. But yeah, so that definitely makes sense.
And so guys do all sorts of crazy things to increase the size of the penis. So some people get surgery to cut the suspensory ligament, which is a disaster. Some guys get silicone implants, not for erectile function, but for size enhancement. And I've seen really catastrophic results from that. And some guys get fillers put in their penis, and that gives you a thick penis, but it doesn't increase the length. So you get what I call a pig in a blanket penis.
Right.
You guys have pig in a blanket, right, in Australia?
We do, yes. Yeah, and that is a horrible image, but thank you for sharing.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, they're good at cocktail parties, but not in the bedroom. And some guys get fat transfers, and you also get this kind of squishy pig in a blanket penis. And so, you know, as a clinical researcher, I have a background in clinical research. I thought, well, there's got to be a better way. And since I did a lot of PRP, and there was a claim that PRP increased the size of the penis, although that's never been validated up until now, I decided to put together a protocol. And that protocol was a PRP injection once a month for 6 months, and using a traction device developed by a friend of mine at the Mayo Clinic, which is a very reputable institution in the United States. And so 20 minutes twice a day of traction, and using a penis pump, 12 minutes in the morning, 12 minutes in the evening, and then using the nitric oxide boosting supplement called Affirm that I created, and created a protocol, got it approved by an institutional review board, got it listed by clinicaltrials.gov, which is the National Institutes of Health website in the United States. And I got 30 or 29 guys to complete the study. And what we found is we increased the length by 0.8 inches, increased the girth by 0.47 inches. So about 2 centimeters in length, 1 centimeter in girth. And every guy in the study noted improved function, right? So it's hard to quantify function that goes from normal to better than normal, right? So all of our validated instruments are to look at guys who have erectile dysfunction and how much we can improve their dysfunction to get to function. So I used what's called a Likert score, which is same, better, much better, worse, much worse. And everyone said, oh, my function's better.
So these are all quote unquote normal or healthy guys to begin with.
Yeah, they're healthy guys between the ages of 20 and 55, right? Because if you have erectile dysfunction, you can't even fill up the penis you have with blood. So why are you going to increase the size of the penis? And the way you maintain penile size is by getting good nighttime erections. So even if you were able to increase the size of a guy's penis, if they had erectile dysfunction and they weren't getting nighttime erections, you're basically just wasting your time. And I don't like wasting people's time.
Sure, sure. And are there guys that are looking more specifically for girth versus length or vice versa?
Yeah, there are. I mean, I even have patients who have had previous fillers that are, you know, they have that pig in a blanket look and they want longer penis so that it looks like they have a, you know, a symmetrical normal penis as opposed to a pig in a blanket penis. So they don't do the suction, they just do the traction.
Right. So that is what I wanted to ask you about. Is there a different protocol if you're looking for girth versus length and the other way around?
Well, you know, you just don't do the suction device.
Sure.
If you don't want more girth.
Is it, and I'm just spitballing here, is it potentially worth getting a more slender suction device so that rather than expanding outwards in girth, the suction device is extending you lengthways through the device?
Yeah, but the traction device that we use is much, much more effective for length. So if you want length, use the RestoreX device. If you want girth, use a suction device.
Right. And I appreciate that there's the, again, multimodal approach with the traction and suction. The other thing I wanted to ask you there is something that you mentioned, well, something that I think I mentioned, I'd love to circle back around to it because it's something I've heard some people talk about, but it's not super, like I haven't heard much discourse around it, is like what can happen when there is fullness of blood in the penis, but no erection. So, and I've heard people use the phrase hard flaccid, for example, to describe that. And I'm wondering, is that a term that you are familiar with? And is it something that you've noticed or is it something that you work with?
Yeah. So let me just for a second, circle back to P-long and then I'll get to hard flaccid.
Yeah, please.
So for anyone that's interested in P-long, just go to p-long.com and we have loads of information on there. We have the clinical research paper that was published in the Journal of Andrology. We have presentations that I did at the International Society of Sexual Medicine and the Sexual Medicine Society of North America. There's webinars that I've done. There's information on the protocol. And then there are also ways to identify providers. And fortunately, we are just bringing a provider in Australia online, and we also have one in New Zealand. So you don't have to travel to California in order to get your penis size enhanced.
And providers, medical practitioners, they're medical professionals?
Yeah, doctors, yeah. Now, in terms of hard flaccid, that's a kind of a controversy in the urology community, but it's basically a fibrosis of the penis that gives the penis kind of a firmness, but that firmness more is from kind of a fibrosis or scar tissue than from an increase in blood flow.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And is there anything that particularly can lead to that?
You know, that's a good question. There are certain medications that people have thought can lead to that. Sometimes trauma can lead to that.
That's what I've heard. Yeah. Injury.
Yeah. Injury. You know, a generation of some people just have a overly vigorous inflammatory response. I even had one patient or two patients, I think, that had COVID that ended up with kind of a version of hard flaccid. It's not really a well-defined condition at this point, and it's still controversial in the sexual medicine community of whether it's really an entity or not. But, you know, I've read a number of papers now on small series of patients.
Yeah. And what does the literature, or at least your own experience, tell you is the right treatment pathway for that?
Yeah. So what I do is I go full, all out, kitchen sink approach. Because my patients don't care like what actually works. They care that something works. And so I do my multimodal therapy with, you know, Affirm and a PDE5 inhibitor and penis pump and shockwave therapy, PRP. I also add botulism neurotoxin. So if you inject Botox into the penis, you relax the vascular smooth muscle and open up the vascular channels. And so you increase the size of the penis in the flaccid state. Also, I use what's called the MCELA chair, which is some original research that I've done, which is a high intensity focused electromagnetic wave stimulation of the pelvic floor, which causes contraction of the pelvic floor muscles and increasing blood flow into the penis and stimulation of the blood vessels and nerves.
Yeah, fascinating. Cool. I'll have to check that out. Is that available on your website, information around that?
We just published those two papers like literally last month.
Okay, cool.
So eventually I'll get around to putting them up on my website.
Great. I'll go suss out some journal articles. I've got access to a couple, but that's cool.
But I can send you copies of the articles if you want.
Oh man, that would be very generous. I'd really appreciate that.
Yeah, easy.
Cool. Look, I'm mindful of time, man. We've got about 5 to 10 minutes left because I know we've got hard stops on the hour.
Oh, that's it?
We're almost there. I want to go down.
Really, you know.
Something Judson,
there's stuff to talk about.
I have heard from, and something that I get, I'm an ambassador for a sex toy company, so I get sent a bunch of toys. And one of the things that I have explored and experimented with is specifically pumping to increase size of the glands specifically and not the whole shaft of the penis. And so I'm curious if that's something you have heard about, or if it's something that you would recommend exploring, or if it factors into the gland size into your patient's desires for a penile enhancement.
Yeah, you know, I don't know how that would work, because the erectile bodies are surrounded with fascia called the tunica albuginea. And so when you're increasing the size of the penis, you're actually increasing the size of the tunica. Like, you know, if you're blowing up a balloon, if you stretch out the balloon so the balloon can get bigger, then you're going to get a bigger balloon. But the spongy tissue of the glands doesn't have that connective tissue. It's basically just spongy tissue. And so I don't know how that would work. There's no literature. I'm almost fairly certain that there's no literature on increasing the glands with a pump.
Yeah, I couldn't find anything to that effect either. But yeah, people make toys and they try it out. And people, like you said before, people do anything on their penis.
Yeah, people will do anything on their penis. And so that's why I created the P-Long, is that at least there's a safe, scientifically proven way to increase the penis. And there's, you know, realistic understanding of what is accomplishable, right? So the thing is, in not sexual medicine, but, you know, there's so much misinformation and so much mismarketing in the field of sexual medicine that it's really disgraceful. I mean, I was watching a podcast, and the person that invented markets the Phoenix device got up there and said, well, it's 98% effective. And they said, well, how do you know it's 98% effective? And they said, well, only 2% of them get returned.
Oh.
Like, that's not the way that we...
Yeah, and that
devices. And so, and you know, like, there, I get stuff all the time, because probably just because I'm on all these websites and stuff like that, on penile enhancement pills and devices, and it's just a bunch of crap. And, you know, people are insecure, and people aren't going to go down to the post office and say, yeah, I ordered this penile enhancement pump, but it doesn't work. My penis is still small. Right? They're just going to eat the couple hundred bucks that they spent because they're too embarrassed to go down to the post office. And so, you know, that's how these folks are making money, is that they're selling junk with ridiculous marketing claims, and insecure guys are just buying the stuff and just eating the cost. So, you know, if you're out there, there are really good places to go for information. I mean, you can order my book, The 21st Century Man. You go to my YouTube site, you go to my website. I'm all about providing men and women, but mostly men, with really good, legitimate information. Or there's the International Society of Sexual Medicine or the Sexual Medicine Society of North America. So there's, you know, there are organizations of folks like me and folks also in academia that publish papers and write stuff that will provide you with really good, legitimate information, so you don't have to go down the Reddit rabbit hole.
Yes, the Reddit rabbit holes are, there's a plethora of them, and they sometimes get a little bit scary. Something that I was really intentional not to really go into with you on this podcast, but you just mentioned it just then, was around men's insecurities, right? And so I know a lot of companies and a lot of providers are preying upon men's insecurities. And we mentioned before, the statistics tell us that a lot of guys are insecure about the size of their penis. A lot of men want their penis to be bigger. So something that I didn't really go into this conversation with you around is, how do we stop men feeling insecure? Like if I get guys that come and see me as clients and they say, hey, I'm wanting to increase the size of my penis, I'm, you know, happy to refer them on. I'm saying like, hey man, yep, you're welcome to go and check out Dr. Brandeis. There's other people doing this sort of stuff. You know, there's protocols out there you can follow. Just make sure you're doing it with a reputable source. And I'm happy to support them in the sexual pleasure side of things and the communication side of things with their partner and their body image and exploring their self-pleasure. And so I'm okay with people wanting to do penile enhancements with their bodies. And I also think it's important to have more systemic conversation around reducing the amount of insecurity that guys have around penis size and anxiety around their bodies, and making sure that they're not being preyed upon by exploitative companies, which are trying to make money from pressing those insecurities to guys as well. So yeah, just wanted to acknowledge that I specifically didn't go into that on this conversation with you, because I'm okay with people going and doing penile enhancement if that's what they're wanting to do, just as long as they're doing it reputably.
Well, but I think that the information that you're providing and the work that you're doing is really essential in helping guys understand what's normal, what's not normal. I mean, you know, a lot of times just putting out the information on what is a normal penile size is enough to get guys to say, oh, okay. And, you know, within the P-Long study, you know, more than half of the guys in the study had longer than average penises. So it's, you know, it's the guys that are doing penile enhancement aren't necessarily guys with small penises. It's all guys. You know, if you want, in the United States, 300,000 women each year get breast implants, right? Not all of them have breast cancer. Women just want to have bigger breasts. I mean, so what? You know, that's, if they want it and they can afford it, you know, God bless them. And so, you know, for guys that are interested in increasing the length, girth, and function of a healthy penis, otherwise healthy penis, don't do fillers, don't do fat transfers, don't do surgeries, don't do ligament ligation, because they can basically turn a healthy penis into a catastrophe. I had one guy who had an implant, not for erectile dysfunction, but for size. And he's like an otherwise totally healthy 30-year-old nurse. He ended up in the hospital for a week on intravenous antibiotics because it got infected. Then it got removed. And then he's had two follow-up surgeries to try to undo the damage from the first surgery that he had, which wasn't really necessary to begin with because he had a normal sized penis. And so it's really important not to do stuff that potentially could really mess you up.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for mentioning that, Maiden. Yeah. One of the things that I like to educate around is, you know, how to work with what you've got, right? And whether that's because you can't afford a penile enhancement or because you don't want to, or for whatever other reason, like, you know, just learning more about how to use specifically your anatomy with the person that you're with, there's sexual calibration there and finding out how to experience as much pleasure as possible with the anatomy that you've been gifted, you know, is something that I do a lot of educating around. And so I'm appreciative that you're offering treatment and practices for guys who are wanting to explore and go down that route, because I don't think there's inherently anything wrong with it, as long as they're going to people like yourself, mate, because there's, like you said before, some very questionable other providers out there.
Awesome.
Yeah, thanks so much for taking the time, man. I know we're both busy and we've got some things to do today, and I'm grateful that you spent the time having a chat with me. And if you're ever open to doing a round two, I'd love to go into the nuances of some of the other things that we didn't get to today, but I'll look out for those papers, man. I'm super fascinated by them. I'd love to hear you. And I'll talk to you again real soon, brother.
Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Judson.
Take it easy. Bye-bye.
See you, mate.